That's the great Stanley Turrentine on tenor sax, opening up with River's Invitation from his 1965 album, Joyride, one of my absolute favorite albums. A young man, relatively unknown at the time, is at piano, Herbie Hancock, Kenny Burrell on guitar, Bob Cranshaw on bass, and Grady Tate on drums, and backed up by an orchestra of greats, Clark Terry, Ernie Royal, Snooky Young on trumpet, Henry Coker, J.J. Johnson, and Jimmy Cleveland on trombone, Phil Woods on alto, as well as Jerry Dajan on alto, and Danny Bank on baritone sax, all under the command of Oliver Nelson, who also did the arrangement. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Wednesday. I'm not ready. Time is going by too fast, way too fast. It's Wednesday, September the 10th, and we're talking about the fact that there is no answer to a key question in Ferguson, Missouri. What is that key question? Why has Officer Darren Wilson of the local police department, the Darren Wilson who shot and killed 18-year-old Michael Brown about a month ago on August the 9th, why has he not been arrested? It's been a month since the Reverend Al Sharpton and a coterie of civil rights leaders went to Ferguson, Missouri, taking charge of this incendiary shooting and promising that there will be some justice. But last night, exactly a month after the shooting occurred, there was a meeting of the city council. It was the first meeting since the shooting, and it immediately turned into a raucous exchange, a face-off between still angry residents of the predominantly African-American town facing off against the almost all-white government, the city council and the mayor, and asking the question, how is it that Officer Darren Wilson has not yet been arrested and charged? Now, this brings me back. I've been talking about this for quite some time now, since not just the killing of Michael Brown, but also the chokehold death in Staten Island, New York, on July the 17th of Eric Garner, in which Sharpton also emerged as the central quote, leader, unquote, taking charge of that case, but absolutely the same scenario obtains. I had said before, as regards that particular incident, that it is Sharpton himself who is in a political chokehold. And political considerations have taken precedence over justice. The cry of no justice, no peace actually should be translated into, I'm here to ensure the peace, but not necessarily justice for my political patrons. It is unconscionable, that's the only word that I could think of, that this much time has elapsed in both cases, where people swoop in and there's a lot of tra-la-la, a lot of organized media hype, a lot of activity made in the name of justice, and a lot of bloviating going on, and no concrete results. Not even in the most elemental and fundamental ways. It isn't about how big a march you can stage. It isn't about how many cameras could show up to your press conferences. It isn't about using, literally, and this is so offensive, using the deaths of individuals under these horrible circumstances to increase your political currency. It is about justice. And to this date, 1 month after Michael Brown is killed, 2 months after Eric Garner is killed, both under highly questionable circumstances, the words special prosecutor have yet to even come out of Sharpton's mouth, let alone backed up by an application to the court, court papers compelling the governor, seeking the governor to put a special prosecutor in each of these cases. And he won't do that because in both cases, in New York City and in Ferguson, Missouri, I should say, in New York State and in Ferguson, the state of Missouri, the governors and the political apparatus is Democrat controlled. In New York, for example, just yesterday we had the primary in which Governor Andrew Cuomo prevailed, and people are thinking it's a great thing that he was expected to win. However, what is significant about that race is that a total neophyte, a law professor from Fordham University, Zephyr Teachout, running for the first time, completely new to this scene of politics, was able to walk away with one-third of the vote. And yet, she did not, like Andrew Cuomo had, she did not have the advantage of name recognition. She did not have the advantage of being the son of a previous governor. She did not have the advantage of a political infrastructure that would support her. She did not have the advantage of tons and tons of money. And she did not have the advantage of pliant, servile members of the black community in its so-called civil rights and clerical sectors running out there doing the bidding of the Democratic Party. She didn't have any of those things. And yet she walked away with one-third of the vote. What does that mean? It means that Cuomo is not the gift that he claims to be, and neither is he that safe in office. And what is particularly important to understand about Cuomo is that he is absolutely, just like his dad, anathema to the interests of African Americans in the state of New York. Absolutely averse to it. Cut the school budget by more than $1 billion, for one thing. And he has not advanced anything that is important to African Americans in the state of New York. And yet he has these minions, like Sharpton and others, running around, bringing souls to the polls. And in a very real way, his victory yesterday, although he lost one-third of his base to a total neophyte, means he is vulnerable. But that vulnerable though he is, it was the black vote still that factored in his victory, delivered by the people like Sharpton. And that is why, because of this cozy relationship, which works for Sharpton, because in exchange for being very, very close to the political power structure, he enhances his own profile as the go-to guy, the king of the blacks. And in the interest of personal gain, Eric Garner's death could take a distant second. And the just call for a special prosecutor, and I don't mean just getting up in front of a microphone and talking. That bloviating stuff has got to go. Throw it out. It's dated. It's done. What talks is your lawyer, who is so happy that he is going because you brought him in, and that raises some pretty interesting questions. He is so thrilled about the prospect of a huge financial settlement with the city when all is said and done. He's not nearly interested in justice. So there's no evidence that the Sharpton team, Team Sharpton, has pursued even in a minimal way justice through the courts by saying, we have filed a lawsuit basically seeking through the governor the appointment of a special prosecutor. The minute you file that suit, the governor has to respond. But he wouldn't do it because Cuomo, if he will respond, he will now have to instruct the Democratic Attorney General to in turn instruct the Democratic district attorney to step aside and allow an entirely independent process to take place. And nobody in the Democratic Party in this time, election year, the midterm is over, but the general election is near upon us. They don't want that kind of a headache. And it is Sharpton's job to see that they don't have a headache. So, Eric Garner, you're going to have to wait. You're already dead. There's no big problem here. You can wait for a long time. That's the attitude. What's important is me. In Missouri, huge publicity stunt. Everybody in the civil rights, I didn't know we had that many civil rights leaders, had no clue that there was such a huge population of civil rights leaders. But they were there in evidence and doing what they do best, bloviating, just talking. As the great philosopher James Brown says, talking loud and saying nothing. there must be justice and no justice, no peace and all of that stuff, which is great. Where is the first piece of paper that says you're really interested in justice? And to show you how calculating these folks are, on the eve of this raucous meeting last night, where the people in effect had to lean again on themselves as if they had no intervention whatsoever, and I agree they should continue in that strain because they in fact have no leadership. What they have is cosmetic stuff happening there, and that is all about a personal agenda. But in the interest of self-serving publicity, and just to make sure that, you know, the tracks are covered, the day before this meeting, Sharpton's group issues a press release. because you know, that's how you get work done. You issue press releases. And the press release says that they were going to be following up the National Action Network's Ferguson chapter, headed by another reverend, Reverend Carlton Lee, is going to be following up on Reverend Sharpton's call, calling into question why the officer who killed Michael Brown has not been arrested. So that is just to let everybody know that whatever happened last night, Sharpton still, by proxy, is claiming credit for it. And that this constitutes a hands-on personal involvement in the quest for justice in Ferguson. It is a cynical and contemptuous thing that is happening, and it ought to be called out. Because in the end, everybody knows, and again, if Sharpton were just new to this game, if he just fell out of the sky like a stone and landed smack in the middle of these controversies, I could say, well, yeah, the guy is just feeling his way around. He's just trying to get the lay of the land. He's just, you know, thrust in a position he may or may not even have wanted to be involved in. But okay, there he is, and he's doing his best. But this is a seasoned person. This is a person who's been in this game for a long, long time. And certainly, if he doesn't know it, his sharpshooting lawyers ought to know it, that you don't get what you want by standing in front of a microphone and saying, we want justice. It doesn't happen that way. You don't politely make a request upon bumping into the person who makes the decision at your next hoi polloi party and say, you know what, could we please have a special prosecutor, you think you could arrange that, you know, in between cocktails? It doesn't happen that way. When you mean business, there's only one way to judge that you mean business. And that is, there is a document with a docket number in a court of law with your name on it and the person in whose name you are advocating that says, in the interest of Eric Garner, in the interest of Michael Brown, we demand of you, Governor Nixon, Governor Cuomo, that you name immediately a special prosecutor in this case. We have reason to believe that in this case, in both different cities, the atmosphere will not produce, the environment will not and cannot produce a fair outcome. And you make your argument in the court. That's when you mean business. And should know, we're having a little difficulty again with the weather, and should know how this is done. He should know how this is done. The evidence suggests to me, this is no accident, the evidence suggests to me that this is the planned political outcome for both of these cases. By malfeasance, by a conspiracy by the very people standing up there saying, we are for justice, by acts of omission and commission to basically railroad both these cases. And they are already on the tracks. Why should the people of Ferguson, given all this power that descended in the town, that came to town to save them, why should they now be asking about a basic question? Why should this be a question being asked at this date? If you have all that celebrity power and all that political power, and you had the federal U.S. Attorney General in your town, and you had concerns expressed by the president, and you had all of this going on, why are they asking these elemental questions still in New York City and in Ferguson? Why is this even a matter for discussion as opposed to a done deal? It's because there are people who are collaborating to railroad and derail justice in both of these cases. Their job is to see to it that the only thing that comes out of these cases is some kind of money at the end of the tunnel. And let me be clear about this. I am not opposed to the families of these two men who are going to suffer for the rest of their lives the emotional toll of their unjust and unwarranted deaths being appropriately compensated. Let me make that real clear. But I'm saying, don't run the game that this is all about justice when you're working so tirelessly to derail it and misleading people into thinking they should look to you for leadership, that you are not to be questioned, your motives are pure, that your heart is with them, and that you stand on the shoulders of Martin Luther King. It is contemptuous to say something like that. And this, by the way, is a historic pattern within the African American community, where the earnest and sincere desires of the people who are hurting, and this goes all the way up to the White House, the sincere desires of people who are hurting, really hurting, are mere cannon fodder for personal gain. We have this at every layer, from the local to the national. And people won't say a thing about it. Black America is suffering in ways that it hasn't since the 1920s. But nobody would say a thing about Barack Obama and the deep disappointment that he is as a president. The waste of their investment in him. Yeah, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and people like that upon the scene, anointing themselves as messiahs, trading on the hurt and the pain and the deaths and the deprivation of their people, all so that they could make the next day's news and that they could increase their appeal to their oppressors and their people's oppressors. Absolutely disgusting. So I say, the fact that the people of Ferguson last night had to literally revert to where they started a month ago themselves proves that the leadership that they thought they had is completely unnecessary, if not totally irrelevant. They should move on and ask these folks to step aside. They are incompetent, they're not suited for the job, and in fact, they are doing the bidding of the people who are oppressing them now. Ask them to step aside and call them out and publicly cancel their contracts. It's the same thing I said when Jesse Jackson emerged as a national leader, and I was the only black paper in the whole country that said this man is a traitor and a charlatan. And you should cancel his contract publicly. Get a news conference together, and this is why I blame it on the Rainbow Coalition. They let this man just run away with this thing. And now it is the epicenter of his own personal enterprise, the Wall Street Initiative, and other such amorphous entities. Call a news conference, announce to the world that after careful thought and deep consideration, you have determined that he no longer speaks for your constituency, and therefore you cancel any authority that he ever had or imagined that he had to transact business in your name. That's all you have to do, and move on. These two cases are profoundly important and significant to justice, not just for the black community, by the way, but for America. Because these two cases clearly illustrate the encroachment, the escalating encroachment on people's rights by law enforcement. And that's the symbolic value of these cases. And beyond that, it is important simply on a human rights basis to vindicate their humanity. The humanity of these men should prevail over the abuse of the police department, paid for by the citizens whose rights are being abused. Wrong move. You have to step up for that. Step up to it as well. We take a short break and come back to your thoughts. We pick up from yesterday. Tonight is Barack Obama's date with destiny via a speech. Your thoughts right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Yatrice Lead. And today, I should say tonight, President Obama addresses the nation about military action he's considering against the Islamic State. On many levels, as I said yesterday, this is his date with destiny. It will shape or continue to shape his presidency and his so-called legacy as president. And even the role of the United States in the world community of nations. Much is depending on his speech tonight. And of course, as we've covered many of President Obama's speeches, we know that very often it's heavy on content, heavy on cadence, short on content. But we'll see tonight. In any event, our destiny also is intertwined with his, insofar as we are Americans and he is the head of state. So what are your thoughts as the speech approacheth tonight? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And we just pick up from where we left off yesterday. From New York, Ma'at, you on the air.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Yes, great. Listen, before I comment, because I listened very carefully yesterday on the Obama speech coming up, I just want to say that I really appreciated your pause and getting back to both Ferguson and Eric Garden in Staten Island. I wanted to point out, Yatrice, and to the family, that 70,000 signatures, I saw this on CNN. A young state representative had gathered 70,000 signatures, and as she tried to deliver them to a public building, to Governor Nixon, somehow they had set up level of police forces, were denying her entrance, and then, of course, CNN cut it off, so you don't know, because she was with also an NAACP a person, and there were two of them, and she was just going under the tapes, and then CNN, of course, left you hanging, not knowing whether she was snatched off and arrested. But 70,000 signatures were gathered for a special prosecutor. And we really need to stay on this, and I like the way you frame this as a human rights issue. We really need to drill down, because as you said, this doesn't just affect the African descendant community. It affects everyone, and we see, in fact, there was some excellent programming on Letters in Politics that had about these hearings that were on yesterday, and it's to continue on the militarization, and they're getting all these 20,000 ton vehicles, which tears up city roads, and assault rifles, and some of which is winding up on eBay and other places. So, but getting to the Obama situation, I was listening very carefully. Some of the first callers, I was somewhat otherwise engaged, but they made some good points. But Joel really rang my bell. If you recall Joel from New York,
the points he made. Great feedback on the Facebook page as well.
Okay. And he basically was saying, we got a war party. It's only one party. It's a war party. And that's the way that it's all going. So it seems that, because these people have their special bunkers in West Virginia and Denver and whatever, it seems that we're moving where it looks like they want to just take a whole lot of population out in terms of World War III, their final plan of capitalist globalization from World War I, World War II, and possibly, I mean, we just have to figure out how to stop them, because these people are really psychopaths. And Obama, I see him as, you know, not the leader of the free world, as the phrase goes, but he's taking orders from people whose names we don't even really know. That's how this whole pyramid works at work. And I'll listen to the other callers. I love your programs, and let's stay on the human rights issues. It happens every 28 hours. A black man is cut down. There's Ronald Singleton, who you might have mentioned. There's also a young man, Hernandez, I think it was, who was stopped and frisked in the Bronx. And then he said it was like a gang taking turns beating him down. And, of course, it's a frail person.
It's all over, and this is why we need to speak out. Thank you, Matt, for your call today.
I'll continue to listen, Yutree. Thanks so much.
Thank you. From Los Angeles, DX, you're on the air. How are you?
Hello, Yutree. Greetings to you. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. And
good.
You?
Good. And I'm doing fine. And greetings to everyone who's listening. I could not agree with you more, first of all, about this business with Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. And I'm glad to see that these people in Missouri are starting to move past these individuals who are just in the way, obstructing is all they're doing for their own benefit. So maybe we can get a lesson from this, and these people will begin to be null and void, you know? And the way I would add to what you said, the way you can tell that these people mean no good in the situation is that they only jump on the very high profile cases. Mott mentioned a couple of cases. They never mentioned any of these. They never mentioned, I don't know if you heard about the one, John Crawford, who was shot in August in a Walmart store in Ohio, Beaver Creek, for carrying a BB gun at the store sales. I mean, black man got called police on by a white couple, and the police overreacted and shot him. So they don't ever talk about any of these other cases, and that's another way you can tell that these people mean no good in the situation. They're just out for personal gain. So I wanted to say that. About this speech coming up by Obama, the reason we're going back into Iraq and have designs on bombing Syria, I think I mentioned it when I called before, is because the polls are up now. And I said the last time I called about 2 weeks ago that if you did a poll now, you would see that the American people are in support of bombing Syria, of bombing strikes in Syria, and they did a poll, and now 63% of America just totally reversed of what it was the last time that they tried to invade Syria. 63% of Americans are for it, 17% against, and the rest are undecided. So this is why they're moving forward now, and the way they did that is through propaganda, because when you have something powerful like Americans being beheaded, regardless of the authenticity of the video and all that, I won't get into that, but regardless of that, when you have something that strikes people's emotions that way, they can drive you straight back into war, and that's what's happening.
Thank you for your observation and your input today, DX. Thanks so much for your
call. Thank
you. Back to New York. George, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, George. You're on the air.
Yes. I remember when, in New York, you had WLIB, you had Dialogue and stuff like that. And at one time, they said they wanted to get rid of 2 billion people. And
they're
on their way of doing that.
Who are the they?
That was on the program on whoever the powers who think they're the powers. They just don't give a hoot about indigenous people or poor people.
Okay. Your radio is on. I mean, you could hear the feedback, so you could turn it down a little bit.
Yeah, I do.
It's competing with your very mellifluous voice.
Yeah. but, we got cases in Westchester where people have been killed. You had the Chamberlain case in White Plains. You had the college young man in Pleasantville, was a couple of miles away. You had another officer who was doing his job, and then all of a sudden none of the other police officers knew who he was, and he got shot there. Years ago, you had a dark a Greek man who was a doctor, and he was in the wrong area somewhere, and he got killed. So, I mean, they really don't even care. And I think they take these jobs just to kill us.
You really think so, George?
I really do. You think I really... I don't trust none of them. I don't, you know, so you have to really stay away from these clowns. I mean, look at, I don't know if you have a book called, it's the Museum of the World's People. And all these, in Australia, you had seven foot, people. Where are those people? They was the same height as Watusis. Where are they now? How many people have been annihilated by the colonial powers? So, I mean, I think that's where I'm coming from.
Okay. So, any thoughts about the president's speech tonight?
That has something to do with Islam. Now, when they talk about a Muslim state, even though whoever these people, ISIS and all that, I don't know who they are, but they don't want to see the kindling or the start of a fire of Islam, real Islam. What's going on in Egypt and these other places? That's nothing. The Egyptians and all these people are really imitating the West. See, so they're not a problem. What is ISIS? We really don't know who they are or what they are, because a Muslim doesn't go out and kill people, behead them, and all that. He doesn't burn up. He's not to burn up a synagogue or a church or any of those things. So we got to deal with the real Muslims.
Right.
So
that's what
they don't want that to be really the real Muslims to set in. And because Islam has a system. It's the only system, it's the only system that would be pure.
All right. Thank you so much, George, for your call today. Thanks for your input. 888-874-4888. We still have a couple of minutes before the program ends to find out what you're thinking. Tonight, when you listen to the speech, okay, I've gotten notes from one listener saying, are you going to make us listen to this speech? Again, another speech we have to listen to. But it's important because you pick up a lot of nuances in speeches. It's not just what is said. It is also you're looking for what is not said. And as a way of reading what is likely to happen, a way of also reading where the president is in the scheme of things, in terms of his own power. As he defines it and as the people he reports to define it, what does this all mean for all of us? And especially in the non-mainstream communities of political life, what does that say about what it is you got to do? From New York, Veronica, you're on the air.
Good day. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I went to court with Ramsey Orta.
Oh.
And I watched six policemen surround him as the public defendant.
Ramsey Orta, I just want to say, don't mean to interrupt, so we could clarify, is the young man who took the video of Eric Garner being basically placed in the chokehold and going unconscious on the sidewalk. And possibly dead at that time. We don't know.
Yes, and I watched, the gentleman is not, he's petite, he's not over 5'5", and, maybe 140 pounds. This gentleman was surrounded by six court officers, armed men in the courtroom in front of the judge, two to the right, two to the left, two to the back. They also would not allow everyone into the small courtroom as it was. They didn't expect the amount of people to be there. One third of the chairs were turned so that no one could sit in them. They would not turn the chairs. They would not allow anyone in that section of that courtroom. Then they said, well, News One interviewed him after the fact because they were not there in the courtroom. Then on Monday, his wife also had to go to criminal court. They didn't have a docket number. They, you know, gave the runaround. No one wanted to represent either Chrissy Orta or Ramsey Orta, the videographer. And it is just so much white supremacy.
We did have Alton Maddox standing up for Ramsey Orta.
Oh, well, as I said, this is what took place. What occurred was by 9, I want to say even with Chrissy Orta, by 9:15, they told us that she has no case and to leave. So when Brother Maddox, before he could enter, the case was over. They said that he didn't have that they did not have their prosecution ready, more or less. That's what New York One didn't say. So it was rescheduled to October 31st. Now, speaking of President Obama now, I'm going to switch course. President Obama, he signed the executive order where you could detain for an unlimited time anywhere, any place in the world. So as Brother Maddox, attorney at war, attorney general at war, would say, slavery is back in effect. That's more or less what they have shown us. We, the people, have the power, and we must continue to bring all these things to the front. So I appreciate your show, and I appreciate your teaching over the years.
Well, thank you very much, Veronica, for that. Very kind words. Thank you so much. I appreciate them. And thank you for your call today. Well, you know, I've always been, it's more than 40 years now in doing this, I have such a deep and abiding passion for what people would loosely, I mean, the term justice just does not define it. It is just you become so impassioned about just the intentional act of depriving people of their rights and stomping on people and grinding them into dust simply because you can. And people who find ways to capitalize and make money and make their way and gain fame and fortune on the backs of people who are suffering so badly. I think it is criminal. And it has been a deep and abiding calling, in my view, to just continue to point these things out. And I see that because really the community's spirit is so sincere and earnest. People really are such wonderful people at their core. The vast majority of people are just trying to make their way, trying to do their thing within the abilities and the powers that they have. And there are others who spend an inordinate amount of time trying to see just how they can disrupt it and capitalize off of it. And we have had enough, especially since the community as a whole is in such a desperate situation. It is all the more galling that there would still be people who are in the enterprise of collaborating with systems that oppress. We can't abide that. And it has to be struggled against. And this is part of the work of what, you know, what people who call themselves activists and progressives, they have to do. Call the folks out. Well, I hope this program means something. Let me know how it is registering with you. Send me a note at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. And you'd want to stay tuned right here at PRN.FM. Pass the word, would you? And let people know that Lead Stories is your daily must as is PRN.FM. Coming up next, Economic Update with Richard Wolff. I am going to, as of next week, we're going to embark on an ambitious plan to just expand the awareness of Lead Stories and PRN.FM with your cooperation and participation. And it is just about passing the word and getting people used to the idea that there is a community of interest and their input is valuable. And it would be a good thing if they can join in and throw their two cents into the soup, you know, flavor the pot, as it were, and exchange ideas and opinions. And this is how we engage each other in learning and advancing the cause. And it is a good way to expand the breadth and width of such a movement, get more and more people involved, because we really see in all of the stories that we do, more and more, we see that permanent thread in the fabric of American life that isn't going anywhere called race oppression. It is the central theme in just about every aspect of life that we have been discussing. And we have to confront it. And it is everybody's burden. It is everybody's task to take on the responsibility of discussing it, because the more we ignore it, the worse society gets, the more we devolve into that primitive state of being, and we don't want to go there. So I want to thank you so much for the pleasure and the privilege of your company today and every single day. And for me, this is a great thing about the program, that I get to enjoy such incredible company every day. I thank you sincerely for it. And we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.